Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Studio Canal Presents podcast. My name is Simon Brew from Film Stories magazine, and this is a regular podcast celebrating one of the biggest and deepest film libraries in the world. Studio Canal's extensive library of over 6,000 films brings together cinema from around the globe. There are vintage classics like The Cruel Sea and The Man in the White Suit, acclaimed British films such as Supernova and Vera Drake. And as we're heading to awards season, what about The Piano or Apocalypse Now? For this episode, though, we're looking forward as well as back. With the first two Paddington films back in UK cinemas in October and the third on its way in November, I took a trip to Framestore in London, where we went behind the scenes of that third film, Paddington in Peru. There, I saw how the film was coming together and, as you're about to hear, dug into what to expect with producer Rosie Allison, who's produced all three films to date, and director Dougal Wilson, who's new to the Paddington family. First of all, here's a taster of Paddington in Peru.
Aunt Lucy, I have very important news. We're coming to visit you. The Browns are coming to Peru.
Get ready, everyone! He's coming!
Oh, what a handsome boat.
Hola!
Smooth, strong, easy on the eye, and that's just the boat. Voila!
Aunt Lucy!
Paddington,
we're here! Aunt Lucy!
I started by asking Rosie Allison to take us into the world. Rosie Allison walked me around some of the props and production design work for the film, and I asked her to tell me where the new movie picks up.
We pick up the family, the Brown family, who are very much at a crossroads. I'm showing you a photograph here of them now at Windsor Gardens.
Yeah.
And as you can see, the two children, Jonathan and Judy, are both much more grown up. And Judy is now applying for university. And Jonathan is a teenager doing a lot of chilling in his bedroom.
That's a lot of knitwear on that picture as well.
That's always a nice feature of the Paddington world.
I agree.
And it's very much a moment when, which many families can relate to, of incipient empty nest syndrome. And so when Paddington gets the invitation to come to Peru, she thinks it's a fantastic opportunity for a family holiday to bring them all together.
Yeah.
So off they set to visit Aunt Lucy in this place called the Home for Retired Bears, this wonderful creation that Michael Bond came up with. And we had such a fantastic time trying to imagine what this place might be. And in our version, it's part convent, part eco-lodge, Ursine retirement home. And we were thrilled that Olivia Colman was happy to play the role of the Reverend Mother who runs the Home for Tower Bears. And as you can see from the pictures, we were very much inspired by another blithe, happy, singing nun. And there's some lovely references to The Sound of Music in our film.
The preparation just before you do one shot of this just looks absolutely exhausting. How long's that bit of the process?
All the Paddington films, they are beautifully crafted, richly detailed world creations with this sort of theatrical storybook feel to them.
Yeah.
So as you've put your finger on, it's very detailed. Right from the first two films, Paul King really made a point of making London as a have a wonderful sort of storybook feel to it.
Someone's made model nuns. I mean, it's like there's a level below the level of what you appear to be doing. So can you show me this passport?
Yes. We knew that we needed Home Office branding for our film to show Paddington has a passport at the beginning of the film, and it begins with him having a spot of bother getting a photograph at a photo booth in Paddington Station.
Yeah.
So we did, we reached out to the Home Office and asked if we could have permission to use the branding in the film. And they had a wonderful sense of humour, and they came back much better that with creating Paddington's own personalised passport. And so we were very thrilled with this, and it's rather under lock and key. And it has a special, this page is reserved for official observations. And the official observation is bear.
Perfect.
We're in this room now. You talk about where they go to in Peru. I'm looking at this really detailed scale model.
The creation of the Home for Retired Bears has been a particular joy because we're able to, you know, enter a world where bears play croquet games and do knitting circles and art classes.
That is actually a picture of bears in a knitting circle, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. And here are bears playing dominoes. There's a memorable scene in the film where the bears are all playing bingo.
Okay.
And one of the nuns leads them in a bingo game. And so it's a very wonderful place, this coexistence of the nuns and the bears. But as I say, when the Browns arrive, Aunt Lucy has gone missing. And she seems to have set off on some sort of quest. And so the Browns are tasked with going to try and find her. And that takes them to a riverside, an Amazon riverside port, where they are fortunate enough to meet a dashing riverboat captain, played by none other Antonio Banderas. And he runs this boat with his daughter, Gina. And we were so thrilled that Antonio Banderas joined the world of Paddington. He feels like a wonderful fit for the world. And he's, you know, the veteran of many family films and has his lovely warmth and wit. And he's a great swashbuckler as well. So the combination felt perfect for Hunter. And one of the distinguishing features of this role is that he doesn't just play one role, Hunter Cabot, but he also plays five of Hunter's ancestors. In very much, I don't know if you've ever seen the film Kind Hearts and
Cold. Oh, I have, yeah.
It's an homage to Alec Guinness playing several members of his own family, the Gascoigne family.
Oh, that's lovely.
And in our film, Antonio is haunted by several of his ancestors, beginning with a Spanish conquistador called Gonzalo Caboto. And there we see that it's a diaspora the family. So there's an Edwardian explorer, a Scottish missionary, an American gold prospector, and a Swedish airwoman. And all of them haunt his imagination, these ancestral ghosts. So that's very much a feature of Antonio's character.
One of the things about the two Paddington films we've had so far is the tone of them is delightful. But the tone of them is held pretty much perfectly right the way through. How hard is it to find actors who can, because it looks easy for me as an audience member, but I'd imagine it's incredibly difficult to find an actor who can get that tone.
And that's just a spot on question, because you're quite right. Everything about Paddington is about nailing this nimble tone.
Yeah.
And very much Antonio was able to embrace that, and Olivia Colman. And our Brown family, Hugh Bonneville is an absolute master at the nimble comedic tone of the Paddington films.
Yeah.
On this particular, I mean, we loved Sally Hawkins as Mrs. Brown in the first two films. And, you know, we were sad that she didn't feel able to do this one and was taking some time out. But she very much gave her blessing to Emily Mortimer as Mrs. Brown, who's been fantastic in the role and brings just the right tone and warmth and wit and radiance. And she's very funny, Emily. And she's also come into the special particular tone. And obviously at the heart of the tone is the brilliance of the actor who plays Paddington, Ben Whishaw. And he just brings such a gentle soul and such purity and innocence. And he has such a, you know, he can range from puzzlement and bewilderment to break your heart with his sincerity and heartfelt qualities. And I'm pointing now to an assemblage of Paddington's hat and coat and little suitcase, and there's an umbrella here, which is a feature of the new film. When Paddington receives his British passport, the neighbours, his fond neighbours, get together and give him a special gift called the Winsome & Deluxe, a special umbrella. As a symbol of his Britishness. And as he's going to the rainforest, he takes his trusty brolly with him, and it proves Very helpful in all sorts of adventures in Peru.
So I'm looking around this room and I'm seeing creative work. I'm seeing schematics of a hydraulic gimbal. I'm seeing costumes and, again, a fairy fetching guitar. For you as the producer in the midst of all of this, can I ask how fragile it all is? Because you've got such a combination of things in here. And going back to what I was talking about with the tone, there must come points throughout the production where it just feels so precarious. Can you talk to me about that from your point of view as the person who has to hold a lot of this together?
Well, if ever there was a film which is about being made by a village, it's Paddington. Yeah. It really is an incredible group, a real village of fellow spirited travellers all together, working together. And on this film, we've been able to draw from so many people who've worked on the previous films, whether it's our director of photography, Eric Wilson, or our composer, Dario Marianelli, who did the last film as well.
Yeah.
And so they're all very attuned to trying to capture the tone for Paddington. But a lot of work goes on before we start filming with really trying to craft the script and the words and the story beats and the emotional journey for Paddington, and to try and get the words that he would speak and to try and make sure that his voice is present. Yeah. And so that is quite a process. And that begins when you're creating the script. And then very much during the filming, somebody like Hugh Bonneville is incredibly attuned to Paddington wouldn't say this, or Mr. Brown wouldn't say this. So he's very excellent at maintaining the tone of how the story is told.
Yeah.
And then we come to the edit, and again, you keep fine-tuning and fine-tuning and trying to get to the essence of what is a Paddington story. As a producer, it couldn't be more fun than to go on this journey of the big jigsaw and the world creation, and to have it all channeled through this one singular, pure, innocent voice of the bear. It's been quite a feat bringing together these different layers of the film. And Paddington himself is a creation of many layers, that we begin in any given scene on set with a wonderful actress called Lauren Barrand, who she's a small person, and she dons Paddington's hat and coat and is the right height of Paddington. And so she blocks the scenes with the actors. And there's another actor who will be a Ben Whishaw sound-alike who gives the lines, and then Lauren mouths them. And then Lauren comes out and little eyeline sticks are put in for the actors. And then what you see here is this brilliantly crafted bear's head made with beaver fur, which was done right at the very beginning of the whole process when we were trying to design how the photoreal Paddington would look.
Yeah.
And this beautiful piece of work is used as the lighting reference for Paddington, so how the light comes on his fur and so forth. So we also work closely with a Spanish mime artist, a clown called Javier Mazan, who does a lot to devise Paddington's slapstick and how he moves and what he does and his comedy. And so he comes in often as a visual reference for the animators to photograph something he does, like how Paddington drinks out of a tea spout, or and none of it's motion capture. It's all just filmed visual reference. And then back at the base of Framestore, Pablo Grillo, our amazing genius of a animation director who's worked on all three films and is very much the ghost in the machine, if you like, for Paddington's creation. He then draws together the reference of what Javier has done. And also when we record with Ben Whishaw, we also film Ben's expressions, and Ben also does little workshops where he does work at Paddington. And so they have all that visual reference of Ben's amazing performance. And then Javier works on creating the face and how Paddington responds. He's really worked out how and when Paddington's eyes come alive, how he expresses emotion.
So we're looking at the reference model of Paddington now, and he looks no trouble there. I mean, in terms of lead characters on your movies, he sounds like a breeze. I mean,
well, I mean, he is a genuine movie star, Paddington. That's the thing. That's what we've learned.
Is he full-on diva?
Well, he's not full-on diva, but in terms of how he holds an audience, it is very, even just a very simple scene of an actor talking to Paddington, his quality shines through, and that does go back to Michael Bond's creation. You know, he did come up with this very simple, singular, iconic character. It's a bit like Charlie Chaplin creating the Tramp. There's something about this fresh eye view on the world and his innocence.
I mean, it's interesting because you said right at the start that it was no certainty that this film would be made, that you come off the back of Paddington 2, and I remember the press junket for it. All anyone was asking you about is, when's Paddington 3? And from our side of the fence, just like, Paddington 3 is bound to happen. But from yours, you've been very insistent that it wouldn't happen if it wasn't right. I'm just wondering where the eureka moment was.
The story for this third film, the initial idea came from Paul King and Simon Farnaby off the back of the second film. So we did always know that there was a tremendous arc to what this story would be. So we knew that there was, you know, a great idea within it for something rather satisfying that added to the Paddington world creation. But obviously it was very daunting trying to make a third film without Paul King.
Yeah.
Because he's a superb world creator, and his imagination and invention and his humor and his heart were so central to the creation of the first two films. And so they were big shoes to fill. And when we knew that, you know, he wanted to make Wonka and try fresh pastures, which was very understandable, it was the big question was, well, is there anybody who can make a third Paddington film? And it's been very exciting that we found and have worked with this brilliant new collaborator, Dougal Wilson, who's our director on the third film. And it is indeed his first film.
Yes,
so it's been it's been a big leap of faith all round for him and for us. It's been an absolute joy, and I can't wait for people to see the film he's made and to see how he shines as the director of this film. And I had been aware of his work for quite a while.
Yeah.
He has a beautiful body of work as a music video and commercials director. And like Paul, he has this wonderful storybook, visual flair, inventiveness, and this nimble capture of tone, very, very precise tone.
Yeah.
And his work is always emotional and heartfelt and wonderful sense of humor and deadpan wit. And so he did feel like potentially a good fit for the Paddington world. And so it was, you know, we once we had crafted a script to a certain point and we had to reach out for directors, Dougal was very much top of my list. And in fact, when we were making Paddington 2, which had at its heart that very simple story of Paddington really wants a gift to his Aunt Lucy and he can't rest until he's got a book to give her for her birthday because he doesn't want her to be lonely on her birthday. And one of the things that we looked at was a beautiful commercial made by Dougal called The Long Wait, which I don't know if you've seen it. It's a beautiful John Lewis commercial about a boy waiting for Christmas, and all the way through you think he's waiting because he can't wait for Christmas Day for all his gifts. But then the twist is, on the morning of Christmas, you see that all he's been waiting for is to give his gifts to his parents. And it's a very touching little reversal that you think he's excited about Christmas Day and he's just longing to give his present to his parents. And there was something so childlike and beautiful about that. And that sort of fed in partly into the story of Paddington 2.
Rosie Allison. After I spoke to Rosie, I joined director Dougal Wilson in a very fancy editing suite, and I started by asking him just how close he was to finishing the film.
Well, we've just about finalised what the actual edit is, much to the relief of everyone doing the post-production work, such as the animation. And meanwhile, we are busily crafting all the animated shots of Paddington himself, which are complicated because they involve an animated character who's got to be living and breathing and believable, and the character that everyone has known to grow and love. So there's a lot of very detailed animations that go into making him and creating him and making his fur look good and making all the nuances of expressions work, and then also matching that with Ben Whishaw's performance perfectly, and then maybe adding some extra little noises and bear expressions afterwards as well. So we're also doing lots of other post-production, like the backgrounds and some of the techniques we use to make some of the action set pieces. Some of those are done in post-production.
Yeah.
So we're finalizing those, and then we're also mixing all the sound, adding all the sound effects, and we're also doing all the color grading to the picture. So lots of different environments, lots of different shots, and lots of tweaks to the colors of various things to make it look like that storybook Paddington world that's been established in the first two films.
If you don't mind me peeking a look at your laptop,
sure,
because you've got some very striking imagery on here. So I'm looking, for instance, at a picture of a boat going down a very, very choppy river.
Yes.
So, I mean, can you just take me into the midst of a key scene and putting together a scene from your perspective of
it? Well, the scene that just happens to be on my laptop at the moment, that's a reference still of a boat in some crazily ferocious looking river rapids. And this is a sort of reference image for a sequence in the movie where Paddington inadvertently steers an Amazonian riverboat down the wrong tributary and ends up in a spot of bother in some rapids. So I might start with a very loose image of just like, okay, I think the river should be really terrifying and the boat should be about this size in it. And I'll stick something together on Photoshop as a reference for everybody involved, like the DOP, the production designer, the location manager, producers, obviously, and just say, look, this is where I think it should be. Our action will be taking place inside this boat within this environment. So start wide and then go in and think about then what the story is. So that's a sort of wide overview, but then we'll go inside me and Pablo Grillo, the director of animation.
That is a folder with a lot of pictures.
Yeah, so this is now, what you're looking at now is a three-dimensional model made by the production designer of the inside of our boat, which will then become built as a set. And then on top of that, me and Pablo have done very basic stick figure drawings of the cast and Paddington and the antics that will take place within the scene inside that boat. So this is various shots of the Browns trying to ask Paddington what he's doing, because just through various mishaps, their entry to the wheelhouse has been blocked by the ship's piano.
Okay.
And Paddington, meanwhile, has managed to tie himself up using the microphone and its curly cable of the ship's tannoy system. And he's managed to become trussed up, steering the boat using his feet and trying to steer the Browns out of danger. But unfortunately, in doing so, only makes things worse.
I mean, Rosie Allison talked to us about the village that it takes to make a Paddington film. What's it like being the newcomer to the village? How have you found that experience?
The first two films are held in such high regard, and there's such a weight of anticipation for this one. So I was very, very anxious to try not to disappoint people. That was my first reaction, just being given this opportunity. But at the same time, I really love the first two films, and I think they're so well done, and the tone is brilliant, and Paul King did such a great job in coining that tone, that I was quite excited to try and continue that. And however, saying that, there's so many people involved that were also involved in the first two films. Eric Wilson, the DOP, Pablo Grillo, the wonderful director of animation, who, you know, has been absolutely my right-hand man in creating Paddington.
Yeah.
So it's good to be surrounded by all the people who have done this before, and to be welcomed into such an inclusive group of brilliant, talented people.
Can you just give us a story or two of just some of the joyful days of directing this film?
So we went in quite literally at the deep end, but I think the first thing we shot was the River Rapids boat crash scene, and we had to shoot it on a boat set on a pneumatic gimbal in the back lot at Elstree Studios. And we were literally getting water cannons fired at us, and we all had to wear harnesses for safety, and the boat was literally rocking back and forwards at these sickening angles I was describing, just for, we wanted realism. We had wind machines blasting us. And you know, for all intents and purposes, it was like being on a boat in a choppy bit of water. So, you know, straight in, it was exciting and fun and challenging. And then there's totally different experiences. Like, for example, there's Olivia Colman has a musical moment in the film, which we did extensive rehearsals for with our brilliant choreographer, Jen White, who yep. worked on Barbie. And we blocked the whole routine out in very basic rehearsal rooms. So when we finally got to the set, which was this beautiful interior of the home for, and exterior, it's an interior exterior set for the Home for Tired Bears, and this film would be the first time we've really seen inside the Home for Tired Bears in detail, which was designed by my wonderful production designer Andy Kelly, and set dressed by the fantastic Kathy Clarkson, who worked on the other two films. And we had to rehearse all the nuns who also participate in this song, and Livia knew everything she had to do, and then we turned on the music and it all just came to life. London
is the place for me. Dougal Wilson. Paddington 1 and 2 are playing around the UK from the 11th of October. Paddington in Peru is in UK cinemas from the 8th of November. Now it's time for our regular news update from the world of Studio Canal. The 75th anniversary of The Third Man, a film we've talked about before on this podcast, is being celebrated in some style with the confirmation of a 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray release for the film. As well as the 4K restoration itself, the Special Anniversary Collector's Edition, which arrives on the 4th of November, comes with a host of extra features and a brand new 64-page book. It's up for order now. Hitting stores in October, meanwhile, is a 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray debut for Sam Peckinpah's film Convoy. A steelbook of the film, starring Chris Christopherson and Ali McGraw, is released on the 28th of October, and it too comes with fresh extra features on top of its 4K remaster. I'll be back soon with the next episode of Studio Canal Presents. Until the next time, to get all the news on Studio Canal films as it happens, and to find out more about the ITVX, Apple TV and Prime Video channels, you can visit www.studiocanal.co.uk or follow Studio Canal at Studio Canal UK on X, Instagram and TikTok. For now though, I'm stocking up on marmalade, ready for Paddington's return. Ta-ta for now.